Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Another show where Kevin decides that he needs to go rogue and the heck with what the company thinks. Just because they give the Walter Payton Award doesn't mean that you do whatever you want on the field. He's put his head down. He's done. All right. We check in now to the West. Adam Bittner, PostGazette.com. Adam, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I hope you're doing well today.
I am.
Let's start with Penn State. You watched the Ohio State game Saturday night. What were some elements that stuck out to you?
You know, I think Penn State looked pretty good in the first half at times. I really can't get past the way Saquon Barkley looked against, you know, some of the best of the best. The first couple games, you could kind of see that he had something in him that we haven't seen from Penn State running back in some time. Penn State was playing competition that probably wasn't up to the level where you could really get a feel for how good he is. And, you know, just watching his cuts and his vision and all of the ways he let his runs develop against Ohio State, you know, was something to behold. I think Penn State buttoned it up a little bit in the second half. It might have been nice to see them try to cut the ball loose. But I think, you know, overall it was a tough loss to watch, but I think there were good things to take away, and I think Ohio State frustrates a lot of teams the way they frustrated Penn State. You have to take the good with the bad.
Right. I was saying the other day on the show, Brandon Polk is somebody that, you know, and Barkley as well, you know, excites a lot of fans with the speed and so forth. They got four guys like that playing at once. That's a different, animal.
I think I said at one point during the game, when Ohio State was rotating in a different quarterback, it seemed like every play. How do you adjust to that? How do you see one look and then get another look right after that? And that one drive where it really felt like they took the momentum toward the end of the second half. For all the good things that Penn State's defense has done, it was just, I don't know how you adjust to it. And I don't know if there's really any other team in the country that can throw that kind of assault at you. So it was, you know, obviously you'd like to see Penn State's defense, you know, kind of button up a little bit more, but I just think it's hard to, you know, consider what Ohio State did anything more than something really only Ohio State can do.
Adam, there seems to be through seven games, a certain formula that Penn State follows. It's not always going to be perfect that they follow in order to win games. How important is the field position aspect of that, and how difficult was it for Penn State to overcome that on Saturday night?
I think, you know, that's really the dominant thread through both losses Penn State suffered this season. When the offense has gotten pinned, it's made things difficult in the defense, and the complementary football that Bill O'Brien likes to talk about kind of breaks down. I think that's been the common thread, and I think they definitely have to be conscious of that, and I'm sure that they are. It seems like it's quite a battle when Penn State starts getting pinned in its own end, and conversely can't pin the other team in its own end. I think the punting issues, the special teams are playing a huge, you know, part right now. If the Penn State defense gets a couple, another 20 yards on a couple of those punts, you know, maybe the complexion of the game is different on Saturday. But right now, you know, between the offensive struggles in its own end and the punting, it's a difficult hole to climb out of at some time.
Now they have Maryland coming up this week. You've dealt with a lot of athletes in your young career to this point, so every team's going to react differently. How important is it to you looking at guys and reading them as to whether there's any carryover from a game like that or not? Because a coach would not want Ohio State, for example, to beat you twice.
I think if Penn State was playing, you know, maybe another Big Ten team, that might be a concern. I think this specific Big Ten team, with what it did in State College last year, you know, not just in winning the game, but in refusing to shake hands before the game. And I think that's really stuck in Penn State's craw. And I think they're going to kind of move into this game as, you know, this is one of the things that they've had circled on their schedule for some time. So I would imagine if there was going to be a carryover from Ohio State, they probably forgot it once they started watching film of that game and how that loss felt to them.
On top of that, would you say this is a trip into the unknown because it's an interim coach? They didn't play last week. They literally, as a coaching staff, they have nothing to lose. The players have nothing to lose. How odd is it at this stage to see this happen?
You know, I think there's some difficult circumstances, but I think, you know, the things that happened last year are probably what I know, you know, from reading the fans' reactions all off season and that type of thing. That's definitely, people want this game badly. You know, and I think this is, it kind of speaks to, where Rutgers has kind of failed to create a rivalry since this Big Ten, since the Big Ten expansion. I think Maryland, on the other hand, by winning, has kind of given itself a chance to develop that give and take with Penn State. So I guess we'll have to see. I don't want to call it a rivalry game, but I think there are elements of a rivalry that kind of make you think that all bets will be off.
What did you originally think of the Rutgers-Maryland expansion?
I still think that it's a good thing for Penn State. I'm not sure how it's worked out for the rest of the Big Ten. Both of those programs have fired coaches or seem like they would be heading in the direction of firing coaches. You know, they have not been very successful and there's been a lot of turmoil at those places. And I don't think that that's good for the Big Ten. But on the other hand, I think it's good for Penn State to have some neighbors, some people that bring some genuine animosity toward Penn State to the table. You know, I think it kind of balances out the Big Ten a little bit more. And, you know, Penn State fans have complained for years that we're kind of on an island out here in Pennsylvania, and that there was never, you know, quite a great fit in the Big Ten. But I think those two programs balance the Big Ten out a little bit more from a Penn State perspective. So I think it's interesting to watch that dynamic play out, even if the rest of the conference probably feels like at this point they haven't been getting the payoff that they'd been hoping for.
I think the time, I'll probably get a pretty good gauge from everybody in the rest of the conference. Where I feel it will be an honest gauge will be probably in the spring of 2018, because that's because the Big Ten basketball tournament is going to be in D.C. in 17. It's going to be at Madison Square Garden in 18. And I think in the spring of 18, you'll get a better feel from fans and programs as to, hey, you know, it was really great going there, or like, oh, it was really out of the way and it really did nothing for them.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously it'll take a lot more time than just a year and a half. You know, Maryland basketball has been, you know, a boon so far for the Big Ten. But we know that people, you know, generally judge these moves by what happens in football. And so
sure,
far,
of course,
I'm not sure that there's been a whole lot of great developments.
No, I agree. No, I do. And the entire expansion was done because of football. I mean, there was
no
question about that. That's where when the Big East was formed in 79-80 by Dave Gavitt, he did not envision that football would take over financially like it has. I mean, the entire landscape has changed. All these expansions have been done because of football, without a doubt. Did you have Landry Jones on your fantasy team?
I did not, and it probably would have helped out a little bit. I have Peyton Manning on my team, and so far that hasn't worked out quite as well.
You watched the preseason. You watched the last couple of preseasons. Adam, how surprised were you by how he played?
I was pretty surprised, and I think, you know, a lot of the fans were pretty surprised, because there was, you know, fans typically wring their hands over things that don't matter come the regular season during the preseason. And Landry Jones was one of those. And all of a sudden, you know, he's coming into a game for Michael Vick, and suddenly everyone's remembering, you know, those feelings that they were having during the preseason that they were really hoping they would never have to worry about after August. And he came in and got the job done, and the Steelers got a win that I think, you know, they probably weren't expecting to get. I think the past two wins, really, are two games that they didn't expect to get. And depending upon, you know, when Ben Roethlisberger comes back, I think they're about in the position that they would have liked to have been, even if he'd been around. So it's interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see what happens this week.
Is there any indication at all about Roethlisberger this week, next week? Has anybody said anything down there?
I think he said yesterday that he wants to, you know, work it out tomorrow. It's more an issue of figuring out what he can and can't do to protect himself in the pocket from potentially that next hit. You know, I think if he had to play, you know, it seems like they've indicated that he could. It's more about evaluating the danger of injuring himself further and making sure that, you know, he's closer to 100% than able to take care of himself and make the moves on the football field that he has to make to take care of himself.
Because Landry Jones has been in Haley's system from day one, is that in the end really part of the payoff of him playing as opposed to Michael Vick, who didn't get into the system until some point in late August?
You know, we ran a story today. I think that it was Antonio Brown who people saw him gesturing and getting frustrated with Landry Jones. But he went on to say yesterday that Landry Jones was making all kinds of checks at the line. He was calling out, you know, defenses and the stuff that you would want to see from a quarterback. And I think that speaks to what you're saying, that he has been in Todd Haley's system. You know, he's been working with this offense for a while, and he was able to step in, and the learning curve might not have been as steep as it was for Michael Vick, who, you know, is a more experienced quarterback, might be a better quarterback, but hasn't been working in this system and hasn't been working with these players. So I definitely think that, you know, from their perspective, that what you're saying is true.
That, here's the other part. Brian ended up being a primary target for him. When you work scout team, usually a guy like that would be over there with you and not Antonio Brown. So is there actually some logic as to why he looked one place instead of another?
Sure. And I think, you know, Michael Vick seemed like he had a connection with Darius Hayward Bay.
Right, yes, yeah.
You know, for a while. I think they all kind of developed that on the backfield. And you know, it's interesting when you get a new quarterback coming in, seeing how those, you know, things play out. And I think in both cases you saw these guys have maybe different favorite targets because they have more of a feel for them.
Is there any juice at all for baseball postseason in Pittsburgh, or did it all just go away in one night?
I think there was some intrigue to watching the Cardinals and the Cubs because, you know, those have been the main two combatants. But, you know, I think since that series has ended, I kind of sense an apathy for the baseball postseason. I've still been paying attention. But, you know, it is difficult, especially to see the Cubs get past the Cardinals, you know, because at least that was the team that was better than the Pirates all season. And I think people would have been, if not happy to see the Cardinals advance, at least they could sleep at night. But having seen the Cubs go through what they did and then seeing Jake Arrieta struggle or at least look human in his past couple of starts, you know, I'm sure people aren't too wild about that either.
No, probably not. I'll say this. Baseball makes you work to find the games, though. You know, sometimes it's on Fox, sometimes FS1, TBS. They don't really make it easy for a fan, do they?
No. But I think, you know, that's all part of their effort to launch some of these cable networks that we haven't traditionally, you know, watched before. You know, NBC Sports Network's also picking up a lot of content that you're not really used to flipping to it for, because I think they all are trying to challenge, you know, the status quo. So it's interesting. But I, you know, I have trouble finding it sometimes, but it's interesting to watch play out.
Do you have a Twitter account And if so, do you like having a Twitter account?
I do have a Twitter account, and I love it.
Okay. Because, obviously, Twitter has been a focal point this week with Blake O'Neill, the punter from Michigan. What are your thoughts on the use of social media? You know, like again, this is a generational thing. And so your generation is the one that's taking over, Adam. So in taking over, what are some of the pluses of it, and how careful does one have to be with it?
I think social media is like anything else. It's best in moderation. I love being able to connect with people that I, you know, probably never otherwise would have heard of. And in some cases, I've met people that I've met through Twitter. And I think that's great. It also breaks down a barrier between you and the people that that you might want to ridicule, and I think that can be one of the bad elements of social media. I think players have gotten death threats before via other means. I don't think you can necessarily blame social media for creating the type of atmosphere that you get, but it does help because number one, you're behind a screen. And it's easier to remove yourself from the human element of what you're saying when you're not saying it to someone, you're saying it to a screen. And number two, it's immediate. There's no time for you to step back. You're not writing a whole letter and then going to the effort of putting it in an envelope, putting a stamp on it, driving to your mailbox or whatever. It's immediate. You can do it in 2 seconds and send it out. And I think, that's another one of the problems is that it's so immediate and you can get caught up in emotions that maybe you won't even have in 10 minutes. But you will do it in that minute. Maybe you'll regret it later. So I think like anything else, like I said, moderation is key.
Have you ever put something on Twitter, looked at it, and decided not to hit send?
Oh, all the time. And especially in our field, people are looking at what you're posting and what you're saying. And you kind of have to take a professional look at what you're doing. And not so much just a human thing that a fan might take. So all the time I'll write something and I think to myself, should I post this? And then I'll say to myself, if I'm asking that question, then I probably shouldn't. And that usually answers the question for me. But I guess I'm not like everyone.
No, I just want to ask because, again, your generation is going to be the one that always is going to use it and use it far more effectively than I would. So thank you so much. Appreciate the time and the perspective very much. That's Adam Bittner, PostGazette.com. We'll come back from Adam's perspective to the Prince of TMZ in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles. There should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
You're shocked I've never saw the movie.
I'm shocked you know that's from the movie.
Oh, well, no, it's a big hit. Huey Lewis in the News.
Well, it was a big hit. I just didn't think you'd know it was from the movie.
In fact, they tried to get Huey Lewis in the News to sing the national anthem before the 1986 season, and they couldn't pull it off here at Beaver Stadium because it was the 100th year of Penn State football. Oh, you didn't know that, did you? Oh, okay.
Did Huey ever play at Penn State?
Nope.
At the Bryce Jordan?
Nope. Never been here. San Francisco based, but has never performed here. So, but they actually had put an offer out to him to sing the national anthem to start the for the Penn State Temple game in '86 to start the 100th season, and he couldn't do it. He was on tour, I believe, at the time. But the request was made. And again, that song was hot at the time from the movie, of course, which I never saw. Never saw that. Indiana Jones, Star Wars, no. It just bugs the living heck out of you.
It baffles me, actually. Although, there is one thing.
Why?
There is one movie that I've never seen that confuses people. I may have been the only person in the world to have never seen E.T.
Oh, I saw E.T. Yeah. I saw E.T. I saw it one time, and I thought it was very, very good.
Never saw it.
No, not awesome, not incredible. I think Dee Wallace Stone is the played the mom. I saw it. It was very good. I mean, look,
See, the last I checked, Steve, the Pepsi Perfect that they were selling earlier today was sold out on Walmart and Amazon.com about 2 a.m. and on eBay going for $500 a bottle right now.
What is that?
That is the soda that Marty got in the futuristic cafe, 80s cafe.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And it's still cool.
Okay.
Well, I was trying to do something like this.
Roads. Where we're going, we don't need roads.
If I recall correctly, doesn't this whole thing take place at 4:29 in the afternoon on October 21st, 2015?
Actually, it's pretty close to it. Yeah, I'm impressed.
Yeah, well, we're 7 minutes past. It's done now.
No, right, it's not.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And on this October 21st, 2015, Kevin is driving a Ford Focus.
That's right. You don't need a DeLorean. You don't need 1.21 gigawatts. All you need is $217 a month. And you can drive around in a 2015 Ford Focus for the next 3 years. You can have standard features like a tilt steering that also has some telescopic capabilities. You'll have the extended side mirrors that will open up the blind spots for you so you can see in the next lane, plus the standard backup camera and all the features you'd come to expect from the Ford Focus, not to mention the fact that it's going to get you around 30 miles to the gallon, and that's around town. Imagine what it's going to be like when you get on the Skyway. It's going to be even higher gas mileage. That's the 2015 Ford Focus. And again, right now on the Sign and Go, you don't need any money right away. You don't need any money down. If you qualify, you'll get it for $217 a month. That's tax, tags, everything. Complete. Just sign and go at Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Well done. We're now 8.5 minutes past the October 21st, 2015 deal. There we go. All right. Okay. Survived another one today. Coming up tomorrow, our high school football announcers to preview the games, including Lewisburg that plays tomorrow night. Chickalamy has unbeaten Loyal Sock rolling into town on senior night Friday. Selinsgrove Grove looks to remain undefeated, and Milton looks to find something to get things kicked into gear again. That's all coming up on tomorrow's show. Coming up on Friday, Johnny Holiday, the play-by-play voice of Maryland football and men's basketball. The great one himself is going to join us on the show. Johnny, legendary Johnny Holiday. And it will be great to have him on. Also on Friday, Danny Gallen, Baltimore's son. Roman Quinn coming up from the Washington Post. And Frank Badani, York Daily Record. It's quite a show on Friday. Looking forward to it. And then looking to try and get Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, in tomorrow. And our high school football announcers tomorrow. This is not a great week for college football. Obviously, Penn State fans will be locked in on Penn State, Maryland Saturday. Bucknell fans will be locked in on the homecoming game with Georgetown Saturday. So you always have your local team that you're going to be rooting for. On a national basis, it's not a great week. I mean, the primetime game on ABC Saturday night will be Rutgers and Ohio State. That's the ABC game on Saturday night. I had a long talk with Chris Fowler last week. I probably talked to him for maybe a half hour, 45 minutes last week on Thursday. We were talking about, you know, among a wide variety of things, from game day to calling games now to the schedule that they have. And a problem that they have is that years ago, the SEC decided to put its prime game on CBS. Now the SEC network now exists. They certainly have a partnership with ESPN that is very deep. But the prime game is on CBS. And this week's game is Alabama-Tennessee. After all, it's going to be the third Saturday in October. The third Saturday in October traditionally is Alabama-Tennessee. So CBS has that game. Everything else is pretty lean this weekend. Utah's playing USC. Michigan State's playing Indiana. Rutgers is playing Ohio State. You know, Baylor and TCO will roll over some unsuspecting Big 12 opponent. There really isn't a lot to choose from this week. It makes me wonder, with all the money the TV networks are putting in, can they at some point in meetings in March or April have a little more input into scheduling before the season begins, so they can end up maybe with a better classic game to pick from? The SEC is absolutely brilliant the way they stagger their schedules. They stagger their schedule brilliantly. There are only 8 conference games, but it makes you feel like all 12 weeks there's something big going on in the SEC, because 1 week they've got South Carolina playing Florida, another week Georgia's playing Auburn, another week Tennessee's playing Alabama, another week Ole Miss is playing Alabama, you got Texas A&M. So it looks like the way they stagger the schedule out over a period of time, you feel like you're seeing a series of big games, even though it's only 8 conference games apiece. They're all venturing out and playing non-conference games in the middle of the year. As an example, Ole Miss last week played Memphis. They didn't play an SEC game last week. They played Memphis, and Memphis beat them. Memphis is undefeated. But I wonder, television has certainly a lot of input. And when it comes to college basketball, a lot of made-for-TV games. And I wonder if they need to have a little bit more input on the schedule to help them television-wise to avoid a weekend such as this. Where the pickings are a tad lean. Just wondering.
I don't know, though. With the schedules being done 12 years out, is that even possible? No, or are you just talking about like matchup of a league game match?
No. Look, I'm talking conference games. I'm talking conference games here. Hey, you can have input over that. The Big Ten, for example, is going to play 9 straight weeks of conference games starting next year. So can you have a little more input of like, hey, look, we'd like to see Michigan, Michigan State on this weekend. And if you could do something like move Penn State and Ohio State off that weekend and flip it to the next weekend. See what I'm saying here? Where you can get a little bit more input in that maybe stretch the schedule a little bit. I mean, the non-conference games are the ones you're talking about. That's irrelevant. You know, there you certainly can get some made-for-TV non-conference matchups in there and so forth. I mean, that's what the opening weekend of the season essentially is, when Alabama plays Wisconsin or LSU plays whomever, or like Oregon or somebody like that. That happens. Right. But those, now, in the Big Ten, you're only going to be talking about three non-conference games. In the earliest Penn State, now, a lot of people have said, yo, you got to talk to Pitt, got to talk to Pitt. The earliest Penn State can really talk to Pitt now is 2025. Now, you're saying there's some holes in the schedule. If you look at future schedules, I can assure you the holes have been filled.
They just haven't been announced. Yeah, I knew that was coming.
Right. They haven't announced it yet. All right. But, like, this 12-year schedule thing, those are non-conference games. Okay, the conference has control over its schedule. And I'm wondering how much input the networks would like to have into that. And I'm talking not now, not in the middle of the season. I mean, I know you have flex games, but maybe back in, I don't know, March, April, or May, hey, let's sit down, let's have a conversation. We ought to have this game moved here, this game moved here, you know, to help us out a little bit. Scheduling is not easy to begin with. I know everyone thinks scheduling is easy. Scheduling is not easy. It's very, very difficult. Very difficult. You got to match up days. You got to match up schedules. You got to match up, you know, needs. You got to match up money. You know, certain schools need to have seven home games. Others are willing to get a home game. You know, is it a 2-for-1, a 1-for-1, a 1-and-done? It's not that easy. I know it seems easy. It is far from easy. Far from it. A lot of decisions go into it. But, you know, but yeah, there's only one quarter of your schedule that's I think you said 12 years, and that's not true. There's only one part of your schedule is usually about 8 or 9 years out. Now, that's one quarter of your schedule is 8 or 9 years out. And that's your non-conference schedule. That's only a quarter of your games. That's 3 out of 12. Starting next year, 3 out of 12. So, yeah. Tiger Woods, you mentioned Tiger Woods, PGA, NBC, CBS. Look, they're just going to have to bite the bullet. And they've already started. You know, Tiger has been a non-factor on the tour in 14 and 15. This will be the third year he's a non-factor on the tour. They've already gone on to life after Tiger. And that's why you've seen such a concentration on building Jordan Spieth, building Rory McIlroy, building Ricky Fowler. Next year is a Ryder Cup year. Just coming off the President's Cup, but the President's Cup wasn't seen on NBC, and it was also in South Korea in primetime as well. Unlike the Olympics, they opted to show it live. I enjoyed it. And the Winter Olympics are in South Korea in 2018. Just 2.5 years away. And the President's Cup, you had lots of young stars in it. Spieth did play. Fowler did play. And you had one older player in there who was actually ended up being one of the leaders. That was Phil Mickelson. Now, next year's a Ryder Cup year. It would help the tour a little bit if Mickelson were to win a tournament somewhere. It's been a couple of years. In fact, I don't think Mickelson's won a tournament since the British Open. I believe that's the last tournament he won. He's been competitive. He was a runner-up in the PGA a year ago. He was the runner-up, I believe, this year in the Masters, wasn't he? To Spieth. But Spieth, McIlroy, Fowler, Jason Day, those are the guys they're trying to build the tour around now. It's not the same magnetic presence of player Nicklaus Palmer, not the same magnetic presence as maybe Norman or Watson had. And, of course, obviously, Tiger Woods, the whole, I mean, ratings jump exponentially when he is in contention. The networks have had to live with this. And it's also a whole new ballgame now. CBS has the Masters and they have the PGA. Fox now has the USGA. ESPN and ABC have the British Open one more year and then NBC gets it. Then ESPN and ABC will be out of the golf business. And I just, I mean, what he means for TV ratings, it's obvious. Anytime he's in contention, it is a huge story, and the ratings follow. But him possibly not playing at all next year, everybody's getting used to it now. He missed, half the season, whatever, in 14? He missed, you know, he was in and out this year and then finally shut it down and was in contention, I want to say one time. He was in contention at Quail Hollow, right? That was it. And not having him around, now is just a bonus. Because he has spent more time away than being present at tournaments the last 2 years, and now it looks like 3 years. Is it bothersome for the networks? Sure, but again, it's nothing they can do about it. So you try to build up Jordan Spieth as your next star. You try to build up Rory McIlroy as your next star. You try to build up Ricky Fowler as your next star. Try to build up Jason Day as one of the next stars. And see how much of it takes hold. I don't really know what else you can do. You certainly can't manufacture the game or the personality of Tiger Woods. You can't. Now, maybe the time off he needs to heal, maybe that's the magic elixir to give you maybe 3 good years out of him until he gets to be 44, 45. He's going to be 40 years old next year. So can you get maybe 3 years out of him? That's what it comes down to. And I think the networks understand that. That's why they've gone in the direction they've gone. You got to look at whatever positives. I mean, you just got to look at whatever positives you have and build off of it. Like, take this show, for example. We build around what Kevin does. We want to accentuate our positives and our strengths. He just doesn't like to brag about it.
Low profile.
We'll wrap it up in a moment. All right, welcome back. I know you're obsessed with the movie. I got it.
I may actually... No, I won't watch it tonight. I've seen it too many times.
I have the Cubs and Mets on tonight. I haven't seen them play game 4 yet, so I'll do that.
Not sure the Cubs have seen them play a game yet. Cubs fans are still waiting for the Cubs to play.
The Mets have better pitching.
Well, good. Simply, they have not hit the ball, that's for sure, in that series. Cubs,
they just have better... The depth of starting rotation is a problem for the Cubs. That's the one area they're not quite there yet with some young ace. I mean, Arrieta is 29. I mean, but the Mets between Syndergaard, whom they got in the R.A. Dickey deal, by the way. Syndergaard, you know, Matt Harvey, DeGrom, you know, they're just... I mean, they've got real depth. And Daniel Murphy, 6 home runs.
Is it 5 consecutive games he's hit in now?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what I heard this morning, was it? He hit his 5th home run in his 5th consecutive game.
I mean,
how soon before you walk him?
Should have walked him last night.
And he comes up in any inning with nobody on base, and it's within one run. I consider putting him on.
Well, you got to think about it. It's all about the matchup at the particular time. Early in the game. I mean, his home runs, a lot of them have been early in the game. I mean, you're not going to walk him early in the game. I mean, his home run last night was what, in the first inning, second inning?
Well, I said I consider it. I mean, I don't want him hitting the ball. I didn't say I would walk him in the first couple innings. No, I would consider later on for sure.
Situational baseball comes into play in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. You know, that's one of the big complaints I have about young players and how they approach things. You got to understand time, situation, and score. And I see this in basketball all the time where they lose track of the time, they lose track of the situation, they lose track of the score. It happens all the time. I mean, that's my complaint about Christian Hackenberg the other night in the fourth down play. Don't take a sack. Why? Time, situation, score. It's fourth down. What's the difference between them intercepting the ball at the 1 yard line as you force one or taking over at the 15? To me, none. There is no difference. What's the difference? You're losing the ball anyway. Force something in there. You might catch a lucky break. You might catch a break where the ball gets deflected. You might catch a break where your guy gets the ball. You might catch a break. Taking a sack, you catch no break. That was my big complaint about that. 10 minutes to go in the game. Down two scores. Fourth down, two. All right? At this point, I do not care if you force the ball in. I don't. I don't care if the ball is picked off. You're losing the ball anyway. Time, situation, score. And we talk about this all the time. You're talking about Daniel Murphy. Seventh inning on is time, situation, or inning, situation, and score. Early in the game, no. I mean, believe me, I see it all the time because, believe me, on the broadcast, we're always talking about time, situation, and score, or inning, situation, and score. We talk about it all the time. Meanwhile, Murphy gets four intentional walks with manager Kevin Herr in the dugout.
All right, so he only cost a run. That's better than five.
Oh, jeez. Oh. Look, just pitch to him. He's human.